Welcome back to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. As always, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And as always, I'm Misfit Mike.
And tonight, we're going to be discussing scary stories to tell in the dark.
Yeah!
This movie released back in 2019, so the last episode we did was The Munsters, and that was a more modern one, and we decided we're going to do another one that's a bit more recent here.
Oh yeah, this is a huge, 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 huge thing for my childhood.
Me, myself, and I. So for our top cast, we have, well, I want to say the director is Andre Overdahl. He's known for directing The Autopsy of Jane Doe, and his most recent project was The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which I still have yet to see. And then we have the producer and screen story writer,
Guillermo del Toro,
known for Pan's Labyrinth and The Shape of Water
and The Orphanage.
Many more projects he's done. Everybody knows this guy.
Yeah, and great, great director, producer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, he's done some amazing stuff. His work can be weird as shit, though. The Shape of Water.
Very weird.
I have not watched it yet, but everybody I've talked to said that it's like...
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that on our Creature episode, remember?
Yeah, it's like Creature on acid.
I wasn't too impressed with the cast. I don't know anybody except for Dean Norris, who played sort of a cameo in this. He plays Roy, and he was Hank in Breaking Bad, and he's done a lot of other movies. Yep. Mostly, he's like the sheriff in a lot of different movies and stuff.
Yeah, he's done a lot of, like, police officer-y
SWAT
type
team.
Roles.
He was a SWAT team guy in Terminator 2.
Oh my God, he was, wasn't he? Holy crap.
And, but we have Zoe Coletti is the main chick in this.
Stella.
She plays Stella. Michael Garza, he plays Ramon. Those are like the two main characters.
Yeah, and I can kind of understand that. I mean, they wanted to use younger actors and
new fresh faces.
And I think that's kind of cool. And I think for never really of hearing of these kids before, I think they did a pretty good job.
I disagree. I didn't think they were that all, you know, that impressive, but I don't know. That's just me. I feel like this movie would have done a lot better if there was like, have someone else in this that's a little bit more well-known. I mean, for doing a movie like this, I feel like they should have used someone that was more established as an actor or actress. So, I mean, they did a decent job. You know, they weren't terrible, but I didn't care much about the characters. And when it comes to a movie like this, I feel like you should care what happens to the characters.
I get where you're coming from an extent, but I also think it's kind of cool to, you know, see some new, fresh actors and actresses, you know, giving their try at it. Was it the best I've ever seen? No.
No.
For what it was, I thought they did a good job. And like the kid who played Augie, I thought he did a really good job.
Who was Augie?
He was the one who dressed up as the clown.
Okay. Who I thought did a fantastic job was the bully in the beginning of the movie who was killed by Harold. But I thought he did a fantastic job, and I think this was his first movie ever.
Yeah, for what it was and for being, you know, pretty much an unknown cast.
Yeah.
I thought I was really happy with how they pulled it off.
So let's start things off here. First, I want to say I didn't watch this movie. I've seen it two other times before, though. I tried watching it last night, and I fell asleep. I tried watching it this morning. I got a baby, and I got a million other things going on. I actually have a life. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But yeah, starting things off. So the film is based on the book series, of course. And these were published back in the 1980s. It was written by Alvin Schwartz, and the illustrator was fantastic. He's the one who really made this for me. Stephen Gammell. He's awesome.
Is a very phenomenal illustrator. I've seen many of his books. His prints of his art go for just crazy amounts of money. And apparently Tim Burton has a lot of his art. Here's the funny part, though. Guillermo del Toro has some of it that he actually kind of bought out from under Tim.
Well, he's a fan. He's
always, you know, he's got a lot of different interesting artifacts from over the years. I mean, if you there was a video tour of his home.
Yeah, I saw that actually when I was looking up some of the trivia for this last night. I saw a little tour of his home and some of the stuff he has.
Yeah, he's got some wild stuff.
Yeah, it's really, you want to talk about collecting, holy shit.
Oh yeah,
there's one piece that he has. It's like on the top of his stairs. It's a Frankenstein.
It's that big bust of Frankenstein,
and it looks really out of place where it's at. The first time I saw it, I'm like, that's creepy as hell.
Yeah, imagine.
But it's awesome.
He's got those wax statues of Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah,
and all that
was really cool.
They actually did a documentary called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And it's available on Tubi right now if anybody would like to watch it. It's very interesting. It actually shows not only a lot of the stuff that Alvin Schwartz went through as far as gathering the stories for these books, but it also talks about the controversy of the stories themselves. A lot of places tried to ban these books because of their material. And it goes into that and whatever. But it also talks about Stephen Gamble. And it shows not only the works that he did for Scary Stories, but it also shows different books, illustrations that he did over the years.
Yeah.
And his art is just absolutely breathtaking. And anything that you ever see it in, he had such a mind for finding beauty in the macabre, and it really shows through in these illustrations. And I've always loved them. They always, I mean, that was the part of the book that was the best thing for me. I mean, the stories were wonderful, but those illustrations...
Oh, they give you nightmares.
Oh, God, especially that one with the woman with no eyes and the stringy hair. Oh, my God.
Who is in the movie.
Yeah, I can't... When I was a kid, I had to put a piece of paper over that so I could read the story because it just freaked me out so bad.
Well, yeah, these were... They were wondering if this might have been almost too scary for children at the time.
Oh yeah, there were people out there who were, the parents that were seeing it, and they were freaking out, and this is evil, and it's going to cause people to go out and kids to go out and scoop other kids' brains out and all this other crazy shit, and parents overreacting, as some parents tend to do.
What's your history with these scary story books? When did you first read them? What was your first reaction? Just give like a brief comment.
Well, my first reaction when I read them is I absolutely fell in love with them.
Yeah.
From the big toe to the slithery D.
The Viper.
The Viper was great.
Yeah. Was it the first one that you read?
Yes.
Yeah.
I read them in order. And I still will bring them out on occasion and read them. I mean, these are stories that I can recite word for word, back to front.
Yeah, which you were going to have to do because you couldn't find the books.
Yeah, of course, when I wanted to find them, I couldn't. But
I tried looking for mine because I have the first one, and I think I have the third one. Maybe I got the second one. I don't remember. I have them somewhere.
I have a hardcover compilation of all three books that a friend of mine gave me many years ago. Like I said, I'll still break it out and read it every once and again. I can go back and I can read, and they just make me smile. They bring me back to when I was that little kid. And
they were very well written for their time. The illustrations really just gave it, it had an atmosphere to it. When you look at these illustrations and while reading the story, it kind of gave you certain visuals in your head, or at least it did with me.
Yeah.
Oh, one in particular for me was, I think it's The Thing. And the way that they made that picture look, I don't know why, because he's kind of like dressed up kind of like a corpse farmer or something. I don't know why, but it always makes me think of The Thing from Fantastic Four.
I can kind of see that.
Kind of. If you were to take him and make him and turn him into like a rotting corpse, that's what he would look like. I don't know why. But that story, now that's the one where the kid or something sees something in the distance and it gets closer and closer.
The two
and
kids
closer
are sitting there and they see this thing coming towards them.
And they don't know what it is.
And then as it gets closer, they freak out, they start to run. And then later on, one of the kids gets sick, and then before he dies, he looks exactly like the thing they saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it was a very awesome twist on that.
Yeah, especially, it was really creepy.
Yeah, especially for the 80s. I don't know. There was just something about the fact that I think a lot of people are scared with stuff like this. You see something far away, you don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mystery, and that's scary because it could be anything. And that's one of the stories that I absolutely loved. I mean, I loved all the stories in the first book. I read them like night and day all the time. And my first reaction when I first found this book was I was in elementary school. I believe I was in first or second grade. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me how I remember this, but this is one of the memories that sticks in my head. And I think it's because of these Scary Stories books.
Mm-hmm.
They had such an impact on me and everyone else for that matter. But we had library day, and I remember going to the library. I was not a popular kid. In fact, I was quite hated. I don't know. I was weird. You believe that? I was a weird kid.
No,
can you believe
not
that
at all.
I was a weird kid growing up? But we went to the library, and no one wanted to hang out with me. No one wanted to buddy up with me. So I said, all right, well, I guess I'll look for some books. So I got Where the Wild Things Are, and then I remember seeing Scary Stories. And I, at the time, I didn't know what it was, but I remember seeing the picture on the front cover, and it said Scary Stories. And anything that was horror-related, Halloween or scary, I was all about it. It just, I was very intrigued as a kid. I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me. But but no, I got the book, and I sat down, and I read the whole friggin' thing, like front to back. I brought it home, and I thought it was so weird and different, and it also made me feel like I was the only one that, like, knew about the book. You ever get that feeling?
Yeah.
When really, like, hundreds and thousands of kids were picking this thing up at the same time I was, probably, but it just made me, it gave me a good feeling.
Yeah.
And my dad, he was a little concerned and thought that, well, some of these illustrations are looking a little, they look, I don't know about this, but eh, go ahead, go read it. What's it going to do?
Yeah.
And he was a, you know, pretty conservative guy, you know, religious. So it was kind of funny that he didn't care. So I felt that it was okay. And I don't know, it wasn't really a big deal growing up for me, but I did hear a lot of other people having issues with this book. And especially when in the special features, they mentioned it too.
See, the thing is, you know, as I've said before, I grew up down south, and you know, stuff like this was like, you know, big super no crap. Luckily I had a very progressive librarian who basically said, you know, tough titty. And, you know, my mom, she just, anything I could get my hands on to read,
yeah,
she was all for it. And it really started with these books.
Yeah,
this, the Goosebump books.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started there.
R.L. Stein, yeah. Pretty much all the Fear Street stuff and whatever.
Great stuff.
You know, all that stuff.
They don't write that stuff anymore. Like, they, you know, they don't make them like they used to.
And not to say there's not still good books today for kids. I mean,
it's just a different era. It's just different all around.
But, I mean, this was stuff that, you know, was just my love when I was growing up. I mean, I'd sit there for hours on end reading all these different books.
Yeah, me too. And when I used to read.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't read near as much as I used to. But if I find something that catches my attention or something that can suck me in, I'm gone until that book's done.
You know what's weird? I always thought that the Harold story was in the first book. It's in the third book.
Yep.
I never realized that because growing up, I only remember reading the first book, and I remember the Harold story.
Mm-hmm.
And when they had this story in the movie, I was so excited. That might be my favorite story, actually.
Though
I didn't care for the way they made him look. He kind of looked like if the Pillsbury Doughboy died and came back to life as a scarecrow.
I think it's there's a visual.
Yeah.
But no, I think
look at the front cover.
This is true. I think as far as those making him look as close as they could to the original drawings, they did a really good job. And the other one there, the white blobby woman there.
With the red room.
Yeah.
Was it called the Red Room?
I don't remember if the story was called the Red Room, but I remember that monster out of it.
Yeah, the Red Spot.
No, that was the one with the spider bite.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
Yeah.
That wouldn't make sense. The Red Spot. Yeah, that was the first book, right? The Red Spot?
Yeah. Yep, that was the first book.
Okay. I get them all confused now.
Well, I mean, you know, again, it's been many, 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 many years. But I think out of all the stories, though, Harold is the one that really messed with me the most. When they were talking about him laying the bloody skins.
The Pale Lady.
Sorry.
That
makes sense.
Okay, I'm done. But, go on.
When they were talking about him laying the bloody skins. So
great, though.
But yeah, I mean, these stories were so wonderful. The very first story in the very first book, The Big Toe, still to this day, if it's really quiet and I think I hear something, my first thought is, man, somebody's looking for their damn big toe.
It's a really interesting story. I mean, I remember reading the story, and I remember I used to think this was kind of corny, but there was still something odd about it.
The first time I read it, I was like, who the fuck eats a big toe?
The illustration for that wasn't scary, I remember.
No, it was just like some little bumpkin kid looking at a toe.
It looked like something out of Charlie Brown or something, you know? But then, the movie. Now, holy shit, the movie, that's a great...
Yeah,
the way that they made this character, this creature, monster woman or whatever, it's done very well.
Oh, yeah.
And Guillermo, Guillermo del Toro said that 90 to 95% of this movie is
practical.
What we love, practical effects. Yep. And the other small percentage is CGI. And I'm going to get in... Well, the Jangly Man character. Now, that was one character that didn't come from the original illustrations I saw. And I was kind of surprised by that because... I vaguely remember something in the books looking like the Jangly Man.
That one, I think they kind of combined two of the stories because there was a story in there called The Jangly Man. Or no, it wasn't. It was The Dead Man's Dance.
That's the one. Yeah. Yep, I remember the illustration.
They kind of, and I think they kind of mixed that one with the Me Tai Doty Walker story.
Yes.
Which that story, I laughed my ass off the first time I saw that.
It was,
when it's talking about the freaking head coming down the damn chimney and lands right in front of the dog and the dog just freaking drops over dead.
Yeah, when you see it on paper, it's pretty comedic. But when you see the way they did it in the movie...
Oh, yeah. No, the way they did it in the movie was great.
It's much different. It's much different. And with the Jangly Man's design in place, they needed the right performer. And they felt that it had to be this guy, Troy James is his name.
Yeah.
He's the only guy who can do what he can do with his body like this. And I was so shocked at this. Like, they were saying that it's just crazy. Just crazy things this guy can do. He's incredibly limber. I mean, that's an understatement. Yeah. I mean, the guy can turn himself into a puddle right before your eyes. Now, the CGI enhanced the movements of his face, but he performed all the movements of walking backward and crawling upside down himself. So all of that twisty, turny stuff you see him doing, there was no CGI, no computer stuff. The only thing CGI was the face. That's one of the things I didn't care for. It didn't scare me as much because I can tell it was CGI, but the flipping and twisting and turning, holy shit, man. This guy, he deserves a fucking award for this.
All I gotta say is, ouch.
Yeah, I was just... unbelievably impressed because the first time I saw this movie, I think you might have said it too, like, oh, that's CGI, you know, they should have done something different.
I thought it was. I really did, but I didn't know about this.
It's
dude,
so good. It's so good that you don't even think that it's a person doing it.
You know what's crazy though? I could probably do the same thing. I just couldn't get myself put back together.
God damn it, Mike. Fuck. Fucker. Seriously amazing, though, this guy. No, this, it was so impressive. So let's get into the movie plot. I'm interested to talk about it because I didn't get a chance to watch the movie again. So so what's cool is that it starts out on Halloween in 1968. And I love that it takes place during this time. I really love seeing the part where they're at the drive-in watching Night of the Living Dead. I love that Night of the Living Dead is on the screen. And I love the cars. They got all the right... It seemed like... they got all the right cars for the era of this time.
They did a fantastic job as far as the period, you know, the clothes, the way that everything looked, the cars, the setting, whatever. It looks like 1968 America. So, yeah, no, they did a really good job with that. I mean, there's a couple of things that weren't period specific.
Well, it takes place on Halloween in 1968 in the Pennsylvania town of Mill Valley. And I found out that Mill Valley is not even a place, but there used to be a Mill Valley like sometime before, I think, in Pennsylvania.
Probably.
And it was the place where The Blob was filmed.
That's interesting.
I don't know how true that is, but I think I read that on the IMDb. But anyway, you got these three teenagers, Stella, Augie, and Chuck, and they prank this this bully who did a fantastic job. Seriously, this kid made me want to just punch him. I mean, he just, the way he acted like he was like a little buzzed because you could tell he'd been drinking. I mean, he played this character. I was really impressed with him.
He was the type of kid that you just wanted to smack the piss out of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's your typical, like, I don't want to say jock, but he had like the football...
The Letterman jacket.
The jacket, They made look really, really well. And this kid was a total douchebag, but I mean, I was just so impressed with him. Me and you can both relate. I mean, we grew up with kids like this.
Oh, God, yeah.
So his character rang true. So yeah, they end up pranking him, but before they do, they're getting like dressed up for Halloween. The chick there, Stella, she dresses up as a witch.
Yeah, and Augie is a...
he's supposed to be Spider-Man.
No, Augie is
still the clown, but the other kid's supposed to be
Chuck
Spider-Man.
Is supposed to be, yeah.
But the mom made a Spider-Man costume, not Spider-Man.
And so only he's gave like it four arms instead of eight.
Four arms, yeah.
A little bit of a breakdown in communication there.
Yeah, but you know what's cool about that is that during this time, and even in the 80s, like, this stuff would happen. I was friends with people where their, like, parents would get their costumes wrong, or, I mean, I'd go trick-or-treating with some kids, and I'd be like, what the hell happened? I thought you were going as this. Well, yeah, my grandmother got the wrong idea, you know, just make a completely different costume. And misunderstanding.
It cracks me up, because now you got these grandmas that are, like, crocheting freaking Alien and Predator costumes for their freaking grandkids.
Oh, it's insane. But they prank Tommy, and how they prank him is quite disgusting.
Yeah,
and
it's a bit gross.
And it shows this. I mean, before they prank him, it shows like what they're going through and getting ready. And one of the kids, he goes in the bathroom, and you see him with like one of those
fish strainers
or whatever
they are.
Out of the toilet, so you get what we're saying, and putting it into a bag. And I guess they took the bag and he lit it on fire, and then he chucked it. Before that, they're throwing eggs at the kid's car when they drive by outside. Mm-hmm. And then he lights the bag of human shit on fire and whips it in the car. And it lands on Tommy. And like I said, this kid really, really played this role. He got extremely pissed. They ended up backing into a fence, like a wooden fence, and mm-hmm. kind of like it messed up their car a bit. I thought it was kind of weird, though, that they all jumped out of the car and started chasing these kids. And he just left his car there on someone's lawn. Yeah, so when Tommy and his gang, they're chasing them in retaliation, the three take refuge in this car of this drifter. This is where you meet Ramon. And they conclude Halloween by visiting the supposedly haunted former home of the wealthy Bellows family after this part. Not too much happens here. The kids find him in this kid's car, and he's got a baseball bat, and he's trying to get him to come out of the car. There's a little bit of, like, romance. I don't want to say romance, but there's some flirting going on between mm-hmm. Stella and Ramon. Two kids in the back are being a bunch of goofballs. So yeah, Tommy finds him, comes up to the window. He calls the kid a wetback.
That wasn't very
He's
nice.
Holding a baseball bat, and he's telling them all to get out of the car. And Ramon looks over at him and says, "You smell like shit. Get the hell away from my car," or something like that. And
yeah.
And the way Tommy looks at him, he just gives him the look of death.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like this kid's been drinking. I mean, he's sweaty. His eyes are, like, kind of red.
Yeah.
And his hair's messed up. And he just looks like he wants to just crush this kid's face because he's so pissed off. I was really impressed by his performance.
No, he did a really good job. I, you know, especially for a kid, as you said, I do believe this was his first role.
I think so, yeah. He came in and rehearsed and just instantly got the part. I guess they had somebody else in mind, but then they saw him and wanted him.
I think they made the right choice.
I think so. Like I said, I wasn't too impressed with a lot of the kids in this movie, but he was one of them that I think really did the best job. That's just my opinion, though. Personal preference, you know.
Yeah.
So after this, they're at the drive-in when this happens, mm-hmm. by the way, when they go in this kid's car. So there's a bunch of other people around, and they're yelling at the kid to get in his car. And so he says it's not over and walks away, and then that's pretty much that scene. And then they go to the supposed wealthy Bellows house, and it's supposedly haunted. And this was really cool. I saw in the special features that this was a house out in, was it Ontario, Canada?
Yeah.
It's a real Victorian house.
Yep.
But it's not your usual looking Victorian houses that you see in horror movies. At least that's what they were saying in the special features.
Yep.
And it kind of looks that way too. And did you notice a pattern on the wall?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't put that pattern there. It's like the demons or something on there. This right. weird, like, demonic pattern. Yeah, that's just, like, the owner of the house who put that there. They didn't add anything.
Yeah, but there also, I guess, that whereas they did keep some of it, intact the way it originally was.
Yeah.
I guess they did add quite a bit to it as well.
And they demolished it, too.
Yeah.
Because they had to make it look like, you know, when they first go to this house,
they had to make it look like a dilapidated, haunted house
that's been abandoned for years. And they did a fucking amazing job with that part.
Oh, yeah. They did great. It looked good. The set and all the sets in this were very well done.
Yeah.
But it's
the locations,
you know,
and everything.
Guillermo del Toro, so.
Oh yeah, it doesn't surprise me. And Andre, he's been to do some really great stuff. I mean, the few movies that he's done have blown up into really well-known movies.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't have a ton of stuff under his belt, but I did see that the few movies that he's done, they're just outstanding.
Well,
they're just so good.
I'm really looking forward to you seeing Last Voyage. I really am. I think you're really going to dig it.
So inside the Bellows family house, they find a book of horror stories written by this girl, Sarah Bellows.
Mm-hmm.
The Bellows' young daughter who was accused of witchcraft when the town's children mysteriously began to die. And she allegedly committed suicide. Tommy shows up while they're in this house looking around and stuff and getting spooked. And locks them inside with... they had this chick with, I guess it was Tommy's girlfriend maybe, or
yeah, it was fling. It's Chuck's sister.
Right. And her name is Ruth. Mm-hmm. And I guess she was, I guess she was dating him or something, but I guess
Baby
she didn't
Ruth?
Want him to, here we go.
Ruth, baby. Anyways. Oh, we're retarded.
So yeah, Chuck's sister. So she got mad at Tommy and didn't want him to lock him in there and said, let him out. It's not funny anymore. And Tommy gives her this look of death, like he's going to just beat her with a baseball bat.
Dude has that look down, Pat.
Yeah.
He really does.
So when she opens the door and says, all right, come on out. He kicks her in the room and says, you know, you were worthless or useless anyway to me or something.
Yeah.
He says something really rude and then he locks her in too and shuts him in. And
nice guy.
And that's, I was kind of surprised that, I mean, I figured he was going to give him a beatdown, but he just locks him in a room. Okay.
That's 1968.
Yeah.
People aren't as innovative as they are now.
Well, they escape and Stella takes Sarah's book.
As one tends to do.
Which is a big no-no.
Yeah.
I mean, you know this is coming. The mm-hmm. the kind of wraparound story that they have with these stories,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, they did a good job with it.
Considering the fact that this movie technically happened before Evil Dead came out, I can't say, well, apparently they never saw the Evil Dead.
So back home, Stella discovers that a new story entitled... Harold, and this is where I got really excited,
mm-hmm.
has appeared on the page that was blank moments before. And in a nearby cornfield, the inebriated drunk Tommy...
Yeah, I love the little like go-between his mom and him. His mom
yeah.
screaming, you're drunk again?
Yeah. Well, he's just drunk and he's... I mean, earlier on, they were... also in this cornfield and like the beginning of the movie where it shows them just throwing broken
beating
beer bottles
at Harold.
Well, he's just a scarecrow, but still they're being like, they're just being stupid kids, you know? And Tommy looks like he's getting all personal with a fucking scarecrow, you know?
See?
He's just like, fuck you, Harold, and
see, though,
beats with a baseball bat.
See, kids, this is why you don't mess around with inanimate objects.
I can make a joke right now. But I won't. I'll try to keep it PG-13.
Since when?
This is not a triple X rated show. I'll just
moving right
I'll
along.
Just stop right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tommy's inebriated. He gets stalked by Harold. It's so awesome the way
yeah.
that they made this scarecrow come to life like the Pillsbury Doughboy corpse. That's what this reminds me of. But yeah, Harold is his family scarecrow and after it comes to life, and he notices that Harold continuously moves towards his location, so he's kind of getting freaked out. Harold starts walking towards him,
Jedi
and Tommy ends up bolting. But when he runs smack into Harold, he's kind of like Michael Myers. He just kind of appears there. You know, that well, that it's that old, you know, movie trope, that old, you know.
Yeah, no matter how fast you run, they can walk faster.
They're going to get there.
At least
you
didn't
Harold, that would have been even, well, wait a minute. He tripped once, though, in there, didn't he? And then he started running again?
I don't know, maybe he did.
Oh, God damn it. See, this is why we have to watch the movie. Well, I should have watched it. I should have paid most of
the money. I'm just old and forgetful.
So Harold stabs him then when he runs into it. And he stabs him with his pitchfork. One thing I have to mention before we move on that I thought was just insane about this movie. This is like, what? A 15-year-old kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
In high school. Maybe 16. And this scene was just brutal. He gets stabbed. It shows kids getting like really hurt. And I thought, I mean, not too much, but just like... It kind of made me go, wow, like, this
yeah.
is awesome. It was really just surprising because you've never really seen a movie like this
no.
that's had this kind of content in it with, you know, teenage kids or in high school.
Yeah, if you remember correctly, because the first time we watched this movie together, and I can say we,
well,
because...
you also have to remember, because, yeah, the first time we watched this, it was me, Mike, and my girlfriend, who, unfortunately, she fell asleep too. So, long story. Yeah, when we first watched this, it was horrible. It was very dark because we watched it when the movie came out.
Yeah.
And we watched it on a service we weren't supposed to be watching it on, maybe. Yeah,
sort of.
But we were so excited to watch this movie, we didn't care at the time. We wanted it for the story, and we wanted to see, you know, we weren't looking at like the graphics or cinematography as much as we were the story and the dialogue and stuff.
We just wanted to see this so bad.
So it was just, it was just really shocking when, you know, I mean, I remember when we first saw this, when I saw it clear and, you know, on Blu-ray, I was like, okay, so it happened exactly how I kind of imagined it when we first saw it in that darkness.
But it was rough. It really was.
The sound made. I mean, so, okay. So he stabs him with a pitchfork, and this causes Tommy to vomit hay and straw and undergo a violent transformation. After he stabs him with that pitchfork, it shows the straw and hay coming out of where those pitchfork marks were.
Yep.
And he's taking his hands and he's ripping the hay out violently, looking like he's in pain, and it's coming out like the back of his head, I think, or through his hair, because he's ripping it out of his head. See, I paid attention to this scene last night when I started the movie. So I know a lot about this scene. But oh my God, if you haven't seen this movie, this was probably my favorite part of the whole movie. It just looks really brutal. And you know, maybe the kid deserved something. You know, he was a little shit. But while I was watching this, I just said to myself, nobody deserves to go through something like this. And I thought a werewolf transformation would have been painful. I actually think this would top it. I mean, puking up hay and straw, I can't imagine. You know that saying you always say, you know, it makes me want to puke up coat hangers? It's kind of like that, only straw and hay. So, of course, Tommy's is reported missing. And Stella and Ramon find Harold dressed in Tommy's clothes the next day. Stella's convinced that Tommy's been turned into a scarecrow. Why wouldn't you think that? But
yeah, it happens all the time. Yeah, you know?
It was just a really cool scene.
Scarecrow, meth head, you know.
It was a really cool scene, though. It really was. And that's the story of Harold right there that you have. And then it goes to the next story titled The Big Toe.
I was a little bummed, though. No bloody skins being put on the rooftop.
Or for Harold?
Yeah.
Now, that's the third book. Mm-hmm. And what did they say about that again?
Okay, so it was two farmers. Mm-hmm. They were bored, so they ended up making Harold. And to pass the time, they would kind of beat the crap out of Harold and whatever. And one day they kicked him and he grunted. And they just thought that he had, you know, a mouse in or something like that. But then Harold started talking, you know, or grunting more, getting up, walking around. They get freaked out. So they leave. One of the farmers says he forgot his favorite milking stool. So he goes back to get it. And the other farmer's sitting there and he's waiting. And finally, he takes out his binoculars and looks up, and he sees Harold putting bloody skins of the other farmer on the roof to dry.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No bloody skins in this movie, no.
Nope.
I got to go back and read that, because that's something else.
So freaking great.
The Big Toe appears, and Augie is kidnapped by this corpse searching for its missing toe, which is inside this stew that Augie kind of unwittingly eats.
Yeah, it was totally horrible.
Fuck. Oh, God. If people don't like the show or that there's horror content, they're going to love you. fucking, you and your fucking comments. Fuck. So Augie is then dragged under his bed by the corpse and disappears. And that scene is really
a little creepy.
Because you expect something to happen here, because it shows him in point of view looking out. So you think that something's going to come from the front, and it really fools you. He gets pulled right back into the darkness under the bed.
And the claw marks.
Yeah.
Something about that, seeing that in a movie, and just the claw mark, it makes my hands hurt. Just something about it. Case in point, the part there in Silence of the Lambs, when it shows the claw marks on the well, and you see like the broken off fingernail.
Yeah.
I can do without any of that.
But there's really not much to these next couple stories. I mean, the Big Toe, it's just a lot of suspense that's building.
Yeah.
And when you see this corpse, It was extremely well done. I love the way that they did the mouth. And the special features, we saw this corpse being put together and what this person had to go through, you know, what the process and stuff of putting on the makeup and latex and everything. And it looked uncomfortable, but it looked really super well done.
No,
especially when it showed the guy moving the mouth while he's inside of it. It looked super well done.
They did a really good job with, you know, getting these shots using just slightly enhanced CGI techniques.
Mm-hmm.
But they also used a lot of lighting and different paint schemes and stuff like that that really made it, I mean, come to life.
Mm.
And this is another perfect example, and I've said it a million times, I'll probably say it a million more times, of why we love practical effects.
Yes.
Because you can still achieve these great looking scenes without having to use, you know, complete CGI and all this other garbage.
I think this it worked well. We said it before, if you're doing practical effects, there's nothing wrong with using CGI as long as you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and if you're using it to enhance a scene and not completely take it over.
Yeah, it could work. You just got to know what you're doing, because it can be done wrong.
Oh, God, yeah.
After the remaining friends vainly attempt to destroy the book, they research Sarah's life. So then this new story, The Red Spot, is written. Ruth is sitting in the backstage room getting her makeup ready for this play that she's going to be in.
And I hated this part.
She starts poking at the swollen spider bite on her cheek. And she got the spider bite also, by the way, we forgot to mention, when she gets kicked in by Tommy in that room and she gets locked in there. I guess she ran into a cobweb or something and she says, like, there's a spider on her, get it off me, it bit me. She starts freaking out like one does if a spider gets on you. So, yeah, so she's poking and messing with the spider bite on her cheek, and you see a spider leg come out of her cheek. Now, this was obviously CGI, but I thought that this was, I mean, how else would you do it? This was really done well.
I saw that shit, and now every bit of skin on my body went and crawled in the corner and went, damn, that's nasty.
I loved it. I thought it was really great work that they did. But it explodes and then releases hundreds of these tiny spiders. And this part, you can tell that it's CGI, but it was still...
And Mr. Mike had to leave the room.
I still thought that this part was done, you know, fairly well.
Yeah.
You know, it still gave you chills and stuff when you watch it. If you don't like spiders, then you'll see. The scene will make you cringe a bit. They did it really well. And so Ruth's rescued, but she's pretty traumatized at this point. And of course, the play is canceled. Yep. So that story. And it's a good story. Again, there's a lot of suspense in these movies and everything. Movies. in these stories in the movie. Lots of suspense.
Yeah, they did a really good job of building suspense for each of the individual stories and with the wraparound story as well.
Yeah, it wasn't
bad. I really loved the kind of almost, it's almost in a sort of weird anthology type.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I got some words to say towards the end.
Okay.
It's funny you mentioned that.
So,
I think you might agree with me on
it. We'll table that for now. But...
Yeah. So, okay. So the group's investigation takes them to an elderly Lulu.
Yep.
Baptiste. That's the word. And they learn that Sarah, she didn't die in the Bellows house. I mean, like many believe, she hanged herself in the hospital where her brother, I guess, this doctor, Ephraim Bellows, was her doctor. They head to a local hospital where they discover that Sarah's brother performed electroshock therapy on her as part of a cover-up and get Sarah to confess to killing children.
There was like lead in the water.
Something like that. Yeah, this is where you start finding out a lot about that story and the book and stuff and what's kind of like the reason for all of this happening. Well, somewhat, not the main, but you know, they're starting to connect the dots here. So the family's mill had been poisoning the town's water with mercury. Poisoning the town's water with mercury, leading to the deaths of the town's children, and Sarah was tortured by her family for trying to reveal the truth. So to avoid suspicion, they blamed her for this deed. Okay, so Chuck, while trying to evade hospital security, accidentally triggers an alarm. Bathing the hallways is just red light. It's such a cool scene.
And prior to this, he was having nightmares about being in a red room.
All of these stories are related to fears of the children,
yeah.
I noticed. And I thought that was really cool. The kid with the big toe, he was always kind of worried about like what was in certain foods and what he was going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, he eats a toe. And then Harold, you know, he had some sort of like issue with the scarecrow and didn't like it. And he ends up getting killed by that. Just some sort of... They all have some sort of fear.
Yeah.
And this is one that he always had nightmares about. So Stella begins to narrate the story with Chuck as the main character. So Chuck is then attacked and cornered by this pale lady.
Yes, he is.
A phantom from his nightmares who absorbs him. And boy, does she or he or whatever, the pale lady. Lady. I'm an idiot. Getting ahead of myself. And this pale lady is just, it's like a big blob.
It looks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in drag.
Actually, yeah. Or the Pillsbury Doughboy is drag.
What is it with you and the Pillsbury Doughboy?
If you see these images, you'll understand. I mean, look, she's kind of puffy. I went to school with someone that looked like her.
I did too.
Stella and Ramon.
That's disturbing.
Are arrested for trespassing by Chief Turner.
Well, you forgot the part where poor Chuck ends up getting sucked into the pale woman.
She absorbs him.
Yeah, I mentioned horrible. That.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Well, yeah, he's yelling for help and everything. She kind of gives him a big bear hug. Which, you know, it doesn't seem that scary when watching it on screen, but you ever have those weird nightmares where you wake up and you're like, my God, that was fucking terrifying. And then you think, wait, why was that so terrifying?
Or you have that random family member you've met once that they're like this giant, creepy person and they want to give you a hug. And I had this happen when I was a kid and it traumatized my ass for life.
So yeah, Police Chief Turner arrests him for trespassing, who reveals that Ramon is a Vietnam War draft dodger. And that explains why he was in this town.
Dun.
So Ramon reveals that it was out of fear after his brother enlisted and his dead body was returned to them in pieces. So then a head falls down the chimney.
Randomly.
More body parts to follow. So Ramon realizes that the next creature is called the Jangly Man, a monster from a story called I don't know how to fuck to say it. When they said it in this movie, I was like, wait, what? That's how they say it?
I think it's Gaelic, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. It's
it may just be rubbish, too.
It's Klingon.
Klingon.
So this is a character that frightened him as a child. The Jangly Man snaps Turner's neck. That might be my favorite part with the Jangly Man because he's tall. He's like a good like 8 feet, eight feet tall.
They said the dude who did the part there, his name
was 7 feet.
Yeah, he was 7 freaking foot tall, and he can do the shit that he's doing.
But yeah, so he stands up, snaps Turner's neck. It was just such a brutal scene, especially for a movie like this that's more directed towards kids and stuff.
I don't know why, but that just popped into my head of Derek Mears doing something like that.
I could totally see it. So Ramon and Stella escape and run to the Bellows house for answers. Stella's taken back in time while Ramon tries to evade the Jangly Man. Living out Sarah's experience of the torture, Stella promises Sarah that she'll tell the truth of innocence if she stops harming people. Stella writes down the true story in blood, and Sarah and all of her monsters then vanish.
And I love that part because all of a sudden, you know, like the Jangly Man's beating the crap out of Ramon. All of a sudden, he's just in parts.
He's in parts, and that's that. So Stella writes the truth about Sarah's life in the papers, keeping her promise. And, I mean, you kind of have a happy ending here.
Kind
of. I mean, Ramon accepts his enlistment and shares an emotional goodbye with Stella before he leaves for the war, which is sad. He still has to go. I mean, of course he's going to have to go. That or he's going to go to jail. He should have just went to jail.
Meh.
But with Ruth recovered, Stella states that she will find a way to rescue Chuck and Augie.
Yeah, and that's left
the
it
end.
Open kind they, of for yeah, a they, sequel. And I really do open. Hope that eventually they will do a sequel.
I hope they do. I hope they kind of do like a wraparound with Chuck and Augie, and then they add more of the stories. With that being said, let's go right into our final ratings. I'm going to go first. How about that?
You go first.
Okay, so maybe you're not going to expect this, but here we go. Okay. This retelling was respectful, and they did an adequate job of not jeopardizing the resource material.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I agree.
Agree? These short stories would have been better suited for an anthology film.
And I agree with that 100%.
I know you do. Instead of trying to tie it all together, just do a straight-up anthology film. That way, you can extend the stories more. You know, it kind of made me think of, like, why didn't they do this, like, Body Bags?
Yeah.
Or something like that, Trick or Treat, you know? But I guess maybe they just wanted to do something different for the time. So the script was severely lacking, I thought. The dialogue and character development were awful. With the exception of Tommy, I thought his character was just outstanding, as we've said several times in the beginning of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they just could have done a much better job, but that's just my opinion, you know. Teach their own. I just did not care for the characters all that much. They just did not grab me. I was, however, overcome with pure nostalgic joy when the monsters made their way on the screen. All my childhood fears came to life during these moments, and that was an awesome feeling. And I know that probably sounds weird to hear me say that, but if you're a fan of these books and you liked the movie, I think you'll understand. The creature effects were absolutely amazing. The CGI wasn't terrible, though the only creature that gave me a problem was the Mitai Dotai Walker Beast. The corpse was gruesome, looked all right, but there was something off with the CGI. Just something in his face. It just wasn't as realistic looking as it should have been. Knowing that the performer did all the movements is unreal and simply outstanding. I loved that. So with that all being said, I'm giving this a 6.5 out of 10. It's no disrespect or anything. I'm not tearing it apart too much, but I just, the characters just really kind of ruined it for me in this. It really did take away from some of the stories. And that's why I love the Harold story the best too, because I thought that Tommy's character was just fantastic. He did a great job. He kicked ass. So yeah, 6.5 out of 10. Mike, how about you?
So I kind of see this movie as a fresh take on something that I loved for many years. The cast wasn't great, but it was nice to see a breath of fresh air and seeing some new faces instead of seeing the same young kid actors you've seen in 20 different other movies. I wish there would have been a little bit more character development throughout the movie, and I wish that they would have made it a little bit more of again, an anthology picture. I think it would have worked out better that way, and I wish there would have been more, just more all together. Because there was so many great stories that they could have done.
Monsters, yeah.
And they could have delved into a lot more things. Another thing that I wish they would have done is I wish they would have incorporated the character in that was in the books. The guy with the stringy hair and the black jacket and the hat. The kind of narrator. I wish he would have been in there somewhere, because he was what really got me interested in the books in the first place.
That's a very good point, Mike. Yeah, I agree.
So I kind of wish they would have brought him in, and I wish there would have somewhere in there, because it's the most iconic image of scary stories to tell in the dark, the head coming out of the ground with the corncob pipe. However, for what they did and the time strains that they had, I think they did a very good job, which is why I will give this movie a 7.5. I think that's fair. Whereas there was a lot of lacking things, this was still a good movie, and it brought back some really good feelings for me of my childhood. So yeah. There it is, 7.5.
That you made some good points there. The narrator part would have been cool.
Yeah.
I don't know why they wouldn't have done that.
I don't know if it was because of time restraints or if it just didn't. They wanted to go a completely different direction.
Could be.
But that was one thing I will say I was a bit bummed about.
I kind of wish that there were more monsters.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of telling like one story and focusing on the one, maybe add a couple in there and like
Monster Squad style.
Kind of like that. Yeah. And you'd have more monsters. But then again, you know, anthology film.
And damn it, they left out the Viper.
Yeah. Well, they left it open for another one, a sequel or mm-hmm. even a prequel or whatever.
Which
probably
would be
a sequel.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so maybe, you know, maybe there'll be more characters or monsters in the next one. If there is, I'm hoping that this isn't going to be one of those movies that becomes a cult classic and everyone forgets.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can do more with this.
Oh god, yeah. And there's so many people out there, and again, if you get a chance to watch a documentary on Tubi, go check it out. It's absolutely amazing. They have artists on there musical artists who will take these stories and turn them into songs.
Yeah.
And they have people out there who are doing oil paintings and, you know, these giant dioramas of the different scenes from the movies and whatever. And they're absolutely breathtaking.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this trilogy of books has inspired so many different people to do these so many great things.
Oh, yeah.
And Alvin Schwartz, I mean, God rest his soul, the man, his compilations were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, Stephen Gamble just did such a great job with these illustrations.
Yeah, great job.
And, you know, I can go on for, you know, hours upon hours about how much I love these books and how much they've meant to me over the years.
Please don't.
No, I won't go on that bad of a tangent.
We don't have that much time.
But
no, I totally agree with you, though. Yeah, Stephen Gamble did a fantastic job with these illustrations. And yeah, these books are important to a lot of people out there. And they really impacted people's lives and just really influenced a lot of people, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just like Guillermo del Toro and especially Andre, they mentioned that they grew up with these books and loved them. And, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know if it was Andre that set up, but someone on the set mentioned that was working on this. I don't know if it was a makeup artist or not, but somebody said it was like a dream project for them to work with all of these terrific people.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the movie may only be a 7.5, but the books, I give them a 15.
I was going to say, I would, they'd be a 10 for the books. Yeah. They're just amazing. Now, how about for the goreometer? Do we have a goreometer for this movie? There's a tad bit. I don't know if straw and hay. I mean,
I give it
there wasn't
three.
Much blood, but I'd probably agree with you.
Yeah, I give it
Yeah,
a
there's
three.
Really not much blood and gore. It is pretty kid-friendly.
Yeah.
But there are some cringy parts, and it gives you the ideas, you know, kind of like the books did.
Yeah.
You know, really scary images and creepy stuff that happens, different scenes.
Also,
guys, the way that they did the cinematography with a lot of these, like, monsters, or a lot of, like, well, not a lot, but the deaths, especially the one with Tommy and the straw and the hay, the cinematography, holy cow.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
It just made you want to just jump out of your skin.
Also, guys, when we say the books, because we're talking about the original Alvin Schwartz, Stephen Gamble illustration.
Yeah.
Not the new ones that they came out with. Now, the illustrations in those are still very well done, don't get me wrong, but they're nothing compared to the original illustrations.
You know, I gotta say, I didn't even know that there were new books that came out.
Yeah, I think it was in 2000, the early to mid-2000s, they re-released the books with different illustrations.
Wow.
Which are, again, very well done, but they're nowhere even in the same ballpark as Stephen Gamble's stuff. So if you
I'll have to look them up.
Yeah, I mean, if you do decide you would like to read the books, if you haven't, try to get the original.
Yeah, really get the
original ones.
Yeah, they still hold up till this day.
Oh,
I
yeah,
think,
those illustrations still creep the hell
out
of
me. Yeah, they're creepy as hell. I mean, it's a book, too. So you can, I don't know, they're books. They're great. They're great books. They're just
they're fantastic.
And they're really, you know, the stories are short. You know,
they're
short
stuff is great.
They're short, scary stories, and they're just they're just a lot of fun. There's something fun to just, you can even take this and read it around a bonfire with your friends.
Oh, or, yeah.
I mean, little kids, you know.
I mean, Alvin Schwartz, he's done, not just the horror books, but he's also done a lot on other different folklore and whatever, which are also really well-done books if you're not so much into horror, but you enjoy folklore. Like, I think he did one that's all about Southern folklore or something like that, which is also, you know, very well written, very well done. And I always like it in the back of his books, he has an appendix of where the history of all these different stories have came from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also something that I always found to be very interesting.
It is, yeah. Well, we don't have 3 or 4 more hours, so I'm going to stop you there.
So I do have some final thoughts.
Yeah, let's hear them. Go ahead.
My final thoughts are, I'm going to recite the Slithery D.
Oh, God. All right, come on, let's have it.
The Slithery D came out of the sea. It ate all the others, but didn't eat me. The Slithery D came out of the sea. It ate all the others, but slurp.
That's awesome.
That is my final thoughts.
I gotta say, out of all the episodes we've done, those are probably the best. I love that story still till this day. I remember the slitheration, the illustration for the... I remember the slitheration. Oh my fucking God.
Slitheration.
I'm just going to say it. Like, I remember the slitheration for that, you know, for that story.
That was beautiful.
It wasn't that creepy.
No, it was, you know? It was cute.
And same thing with the viper.
Yeah.
I wish to wash and wipe the windows. Just some little creepy looking janitor looking guy.
Yeah.
Just something about those. Some of those stories were just
absolutely hilarious.
Were hilarious and ridiculous. And then some others were a little scarier, you know, like the thing, yeah. That one was actually scary. It could still be scary. I hope they incorporate that into the next movie if they do one.
Yeah.
I really do. I have some final thoughts. I just want to say that Scary Stories is a great movie to watch. So me rating it a 6.5, don't get me wrong. I mean, that's just what I think overall as far as, you know, with the CGI and just some of the things that just took away from it for me. But I mean, overall, really, it is a good movie and I would recommend definitely checking this movie out. But it's a great movie to watch. It's a fun little fright and to see some amazing designs as well in this movie. I mean, the creature designs and just the practical effects, the Harold story... Fantastic. For anyone who has read the stories, it feels nostalgic. And for those who haven't, the movie should make you want to read these books. It really should. So, and I wouldn't say read the books before the movie. I mean, you could watch the movie and then go read the books. I really don't think that matters.
No, I don't think the books are better.
I mean, you always hear people say the book's better, the book's better. The books are better, but... It's different in a way, you know. This is a movie, and there's a few stories that they took from the books, and it's just overall good. But you definitely should check out the books, and it won't take you long to read the whole book either. All three books will probably take you less than an hour, maybe a half an hour.
Yeah, depending on how fast you read. I mean, I can probably sit down and knock them off, and
it doesn't take long.
Half an hour myself.
But you'll wind up stopping and kind of studying the illustrations.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All the artwork and stuff is just done so well. But yeah, if you got so Slithery D and the Slitherations.
Yep.
Holy shit.
So I came up with Brushery, and now you came up with Slitherations.
Oh my God.
We are just trailblazers of new English here.
Go back if you want to hear Mike screw up some of his wording on the Creature from the Black Lagoon. That was a fun episode. And then now we have this one, the Slitherations. Wow, that is a fun word to say.
Slitherations.
Slitherations. Huh. Well, anyway, this was a really fun episode to talk about. I'm really excited for our next one.
Yes.
We don't know what we're doing yet.
No, we will probably talk about that tonight.
Yes, we will. Whatever it is, it's going to be a good time.
Oh, yeah, always.
So anyway, thank you all for listening. This is our 26th episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show, and you can listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you can find podcasts. If you have any movie requests, you can email Misfit Mike at
MisfitMike1986@gmail.com.
Or send us a Facebook message. And remember to rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to lock your doors and windows, check the closet, and look under the bed. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
And remember,
keep the horror alive.